It's July 1st, 2018. I wanted to just touch base and talk because I don't really talk very often and I need to get this off of my chest today. I've done a lot of blogs and I've done a lot of things and I've said a lot of things about the mental health system, and it's really based upon my personal experience with the mental health system. Regarding people that I know, loved ones, and everything else. But the one thing that I wanted to state is some of the experience behind what I say. You know, I'm not just, you know, making these things up and just, you know, throwing them out there as far as, you know, what I've posted on my site, the Zion 1111 site. I see this revolving door when it comes to youth that the mental health system provides. And I feel like, and I've talked to people from, you know, educational providers to, you know, law enforcement to all sorts of different social workers, CPS workers. I've been through a trial that has started, you know, from the time my son was 4 years old. And what I see that I think is common that is happening is children who experience trauma. You know, they're traumatized, whether they see, you know, domestic violence, whether, you know, they're abused, whether there's something that happens to children and they are the victim of some form of abuse or just seeing something that they shouldn't have seen, again, like domestic violence as an example. And the trauma mimics psychiatric symptoms. Like they have symptoms. They get depressed. I mean, if you're a little kid, for instance, and you see, you know, your father beat up your mother, right? You're going to have depression. You might have anxiety from that. You might be afraid when your dad comes home and you hear the car door shut. You're going to have symptoms that are, you know, mental health symptoms as a product of the trauma that you've experienced. And what I see in my view on what's happening is these children are being treated for trauma-based symptoms, right? That's the entryway. They walk into, you know, a psychiatrist, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, get too personal on what I've seen, but, you know, you walk in there and, you know, your kid is experiencing the symptoms of trauma and they're treating that with antidepressants, right? Now, if we get into the scientific, whatever backing they claim on antidepressants, there's this understanding socially that it's for a chemical imbalance in your brain, right? Like they're selling that whole concept of depression as a chemical imbalance in your brain. So if a child suffers from trauma, how is that, does the trauma ignite some kind of a chemical imbalance in the brain? Because they say it's hereditary, they say all of these things. So I'm just trying to conceptualize how, you know, a trauma, how an antidepressant that is supposed to correct an imbalance in the brain is supposed to correct trauma-related depression, okay? So you see this, you know, they're saying that it's something to do with chemical imbalance in the brain. So my other question is, it is the only profession that diagnoses people off of symptoms alone. It is the only profession. Anything else that you go to see a doctor for, there is some type of scientific backing. You know, they have a blood test, right? They have an x-ray. They look at something. They take a picture of it. They have some kind of evidence, some kind of physical carnal evidence to say you're sick and this is what's wrong. And this is the proof. This is the scientific tools and proof that we see that proves that you are unwell. Okay. But with psychiatry, it is symptoms alone. There is no, that you walk in there, you say, my kid is, you know, wiggling around and my kid is hyperactive and my kid seems depressed, and they say, oh, it's depression. Oh, I think it's ADHD, hyperactivity. Here's some Concerta. Here's some methylphenidate. Here's some pills, you know, and then you get these pills and you go back to the scientific evidence of that, right? Like, okay, You didn't scan my kid's brain. You didn't show me a picture. You didn't have any kind of scientific evidence to prove to me that this is in fact what my son or daughter is experiencing, okay? Then they give them the pills, right? They give them medication and they're doing it at alarming. I mean, I've never personally known a kid to take psychiatric meds at 2, but I've been doing research and I've been hearing that they've been giving these medications to 2-year-olds, okay? And it's very alarming when there's no evidence behind it. Then it's like, if we really drawn up, you know, this question to the legislators, politicians, and all the rest, and we said, okay, if you're diagnosing off of symptoms alone to children, to young children, then you must have a ton of laws in place to safeguard these kids from being over-medicated or from being misdiagnosed. So you show me the amount of legal laws and regulations that a psychiatrist must take before giving these children these medications based off of symptoms alone. I mean, does the kid, you know, when you go to see a headache specialist, I've went to one before, they make you write down what you've eaten and drinking for like a month before they will even consider you or talk to you. They want to see what you've been eating or drinking for an entire month if you go see a headache specialist, okay? But they don't do that, at least in my experience, they didn't do that for my kid, right? Like, you don't think that if some kid is hyperactive that they wouldn't say, are they drinking Coca-Cola for breakfast? Are they eating high sugary cereals? What have they seen a dietitian? Can we look at, you know, what they're eating? How much sugar is your child eating every day? Like, you would think that they would go through a specific legal procedure. Like, you need to make sure that you see a dietitian. We want to write down what this child has been eating every day for a month before we will even consider that this child has some kind of hyperactivity disorder, before we would even consider the depression. Have they been seeing an active counselor, a psychologist? Have they been working, you know, in group therapy, you know, before that? I'm just talking about, what are the laws to protect these kids? You have to make sure that you rule out all other medical possibilities before we base a diagnosis off symptoms alone. You have to legally, you have to go and you have to see a dietitian and write down what you're feeding your kid for an entire month. What kind of sugary cereals, what kind of Coca-Cola. I mean, look at the schools these days. It's all bought by corporate contracts. You know, they're feeding our kids pizza and Otis Spunkemeyer and cookies, okay? It's all corporate profit. I want to know what the kid's been eating for an entire month. Is there any nutritional deficiency? Is there any nutritional deficiency? Does your kid eat, you know, vegetables? Are they getting magnesium, potassium? Are they getting everything that they need on a nutritional level before we say that this kid is depressed? Before we say that this kid is hyperactive? Is it, how much sugar do they eat? Like, there's no legal protection or checklist that these psychiatrists need to go through legally before they diagnose and start feeding these kids these pills, these medications. So then what you'll see is, you know, if you research the amount of platform there is for greed and corruption within that system. I mean, we don't need to, you know, point out fingers or anything like that, but there is a lot of greed in that industry. And what I want to know is, okay, I want to be sure that these psychiatrists aren't receiving pharmaceutical incentives to push these drugs down the mouths of young children for profit. Like, that is such a conflict of interest, and it is so common in that industry for them to go to doctors, for them to go to physicians, for them to go to psychiatrists and push these new drugs that have been fast-tracked through the FDA at a high price tag through to the mouths of your children, right? And not even say, you know, I want to make sure legally that this psychiatrist that is giving these drugs to these children has a clean record that has not received and does not receive any pharmaceutical incentives to push as many of these pills down the throat of my kid as possible. Like, I want to make sure. And I've seen some leeway on that. Like, they were going to have something like that where you could look it up to see how much incentives doctors are receiving. But the other question is, like, are they receiving, you know, vacations under the table? It's so easy for the pharmaceutical to step in and say, oh, you know, we have a conference in Maui next month. You know, we'll pay your flights. We'll pay for everything. Just show up. Like, there's so many ways that greed can get in and corrupt. You know, there's a conflict of interest there, and I think that it doesn't protect the health and safety of children. And it is so upsetting to me because I have experienced it, I've seen it, I've lived through it, that there is not enough protection for these kids. And it is so alarming that diagnosing kids off of symptoms alone wouldn't have tons of laws and regulations in place to ensure that every other medical ailment was ruled out first. And then it's not, the other thing that really is alarming to me is, there are herbs and there is nutritional things and there are things that have been helping people for thousands of years. You know, you can, you know, that have not been regulated by the FDA for medicinal purposes. Okay. In fact, I don't even think that they consider them medicinal. They consider medicine, you know, what pharma creates. But the thing about that is that we're not even striving in this country for the lowest harm possible for children, like the lowest harm model for children. You know, if we were doing that, we would see these laws in place. We would see these kids making sure that they're legally protected, because kids, they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to the decisions that their parents make. And if you see the advertisements for ADHD, there's a billboard in Vallejo, California for ADHD. And I was thinking to myself, why are they marketing, you know, that ADHD, you know, children's having ADHD and you should get your kid checked or whatever, in Vallejo, close to a McDonald's? You know, you go into rich neighborhoods. You're not going to go into rich neighborhoods in California and see that same billboard over a Whole Foods market. You know, you're not going to see that. And I think about it and I say, what is the marketing strategy behind that? What is the marketing? If you had data and you collected the data of the amount of elite people, people who are making, you know, at the elite level amount of money per year, how many of them actually use psychiatry and medicate their children compared, and I want to see the data compared to the lower classes. I think that it would be a real revelation to people if we saw that number, because one of the reasons why I had even started to look into alternatives to my son is because I was working in downtown San Francisco, and a woman who was she was in the banking industry, and she was, you know, I think a managing director or something for some type of a banking industry, you know, job. And I was there on an assignment, and she was talking about her son having ADHD. And she was telling everybody that she had a neuropathic doctor, and this woman was highly educated. She was a professional, and she was saying, you know, well, you know, my kid has ADHD, and so I'm seeing a neuropathic doctor, and he's got, you know, prescribing some herbs and whatever. And I was thinking, and it clicked in my mind, why is this woman who's highly educated, she is making a ton of money, I would consider her an elite status, you know, corporate San Francisco employee, and she's using a neuropathic doctor to treat her son's ADHD with herbal treatments? And why would she do that when that's not even covered under healthcare? Like, and that's when it clicked for me. Like, why is she doing this other method and I'm, you know, using this method that's provided to me through health coverage? Okay. Because I looked, I was like, do I have any alternatives? Can I take, you know, a kid to a neuropathic doctor? You can't. It you have to pay out of pocket. They don't allow it. And so it was my understanding that we have a high pharma consumption healthcare system. And the reason why we have a high pharma consumption healthcare system is because high pharma profits, and that is what they want. They want to profit as much as possible, and it is a high pharma consumption system. Because if you look at it, and you even consider the fact of the cost of healthcare and how much it costs, you would think that they would be trying to do whatever they can to alleviate the burden to the taxpayers. They would be trying to do whatever they can to make it cheaper, to make it improve, to make it better. And the fact that we don't have cover choices like neuropathic doctors who would prescribe herbs and other remedies that might be, that are in, insanely cheaper. You know, if you think about a bottle of an antidepressant, the price tag on it that is charged to healthcare is like $900 for a 30-day supply. Okay, you might pay nothing if you're on Medi-Cal. You might not pay anything if you have health insurance, maybe $30 if you have health insurance. But the ultimate cost of that drug for a month is like $900 in some cases, okay? And you think about the amount of people who are on these who are on Medi-Cal, so they don't pay anything for health insurance. They don't pay anything, and they're on Medi-Cal. And these people are on, some of them, 4, 5, 6 medications. And you think about that, the full price tag per month that the government and the taxpayers are paying for those drugs to pharma, okay? Because someone has to pay for it. Someone has to pay for it. Ultimately, someone has to pay for it. So, and all of these people, they're not paying anything into medical. It's not like, you know, even if you have an employer and you pay $1,000 a month between you and your employer for you to have medical insurance, ultimately, if you go to the ER one time, that's like a $5,000 bill. What basically my whole point is, what we're putting in and what the costs are associated to even see a doctor and for medication is not sustainable. I don't see how that's sustainable. It's not. And you have all these people on Medi-Cal who are some of them, you know, eating horribly. They're eating like horrible diets. They would rather cover a shot of insulin than they would cover to help a person lose weight. Okay. And if you compare it and the preventative that doesn't go into it, it is a high pharma consumption system. And my whole thing is if they were trying to save taxpayers, they would say, you know what, it's time that we start evaluating some of these herbs and some of these alternatives, because if it's cheaper and it's going to save this system and it's going to maybe have less harmful, you know, not as many side effects, then I think that, you know, that is something worth looking into to relieve the burden on the taxpayers and the American people. Because even when, you know, they raise the cost of health insurance, you know what? Ambulance costs get raised too. Your car insurance automatically gets raised as the healthcare costs get raised. It impacts the taxpayers. It impacts all of us. And it's like, you know, I want to be able to go to a doctor and I want to be able to say, you know, I want my healthcare to say, you can see any kind of doctor you want. You can see an alternative doctor. If I want to take ashwagandha because I'm stressed, or some tulsi, some holy basil, you know, I want it covered. You know, I don't want to have to pay out of pocket for something that might be helpful, that may save the system so much money. Okay. Then the other thing that I found is the over-medication component. The over-medication component. I really, really see, and I experience this in my own experience, with what I've gone through, is that you can go in, a kid can go in for trauma, all right? They give them an antidepressant because all of a sudden, you know, now they have a chemical imbalance because they're experiencing trauma and they're sad about it. So now here you go, here's an antidepressant because now, you know, because of that trauma, you have a chemical imbalance and we're going to treat you with an antidepressant. And then from that drug, you know, there's an experience of a side effect, some side effects, right? And then from that side effects, before they even really rule out, is it a side effect? They will give the child another label and say, oh, now it's ADHD. And then from the ADHD, they'll give them medications. I mean, like methylphenidate, you know, it's got the same components as like meth, like as a drug. It makes them alert. It makes them, my son didn't want to eat. Like it'll make them not want to eat. It'll make them, you know, alert and whatever. And it has tons of side effects to it. Okay. Hostility, aggression, all of these things. And before they will even consider whether or not that drug, you know, the side effects are affecting that kid, they will give the kid a new label and more drugs. And there is this revolving door, I feel, for greed and profit. I think it's greed and profit driven. I really do. Because again, I don't see why, you know, again, the laws aren't established and in place to make sure that we are not diagnosing these kids off symptoms alone without ruling out, you know, their nutrition, what they're eating, without ruling out everything else. Those laws aren't in place. They should be in place. The other thing is the over-medication component of it. Are these kids, you know, having a neuropathic professional and maybe a psychiatrist and maybe even a medical doctor to evaluate these cases? Are these kids being over-medicated? Like, you know, could this, you know, let's do a timeline and a history of when this kid first entered into psychiatry, and let's look at, you know, the drugs and the labels. Did this child get more labels as it progressed throughout the years? And were these labels the product of some of these side effects to the medications that they were already taking? And you look at these costs of these medicines and what they're costing the system, and to not believe that the system would want to do whatever they could. Like if you could treat something with an herb that costs less than $20, as opposed to a bottle of a 30-day supply of a pharma medication that costs the system, like, you know, close to $1,000, like, don't you think it's in this nation's best interest and the best interest of our health to do a herb that might be less in side effects, that is less than $20, than a high pharma costing medication that's going to be close to $1,000 for a 30-day supply and may lead to more side effects? Like, if you don't see the common sense in this and not see how greed is sinking this nation, and that it's all, you know, it's just this revolving door, okay? When you have a child that has, you know, trauma, for instance, and they get entered into psychiatry, and then they're giving them these drugs, okay, now your kid's depressed. So now they have a chemical imbalance. Now we're going to give them an antidepressant. And then the antidepressant has, you know, 35 different side effects that could happen from that drug. Then your son starts acting up, or your daughter starts acting up again. And then, you know, they have to go to a hospital stay, okay? Right away, this is what happens. You have to call somebody. They get taken to ER. They get evaluated. You have to pay for an ambulance ride from that ER to the facility that they're going to keep the child at. Then from there, you already have, you know, racked up, I don't know how much in bills with the ambulance and the ER visit, okay? Then they have to stay in a facility with a minimum of 3 days. Okay, that's going to be another, you know, I don't know, maybe $15,000 bill that's going to get charged to healthcare. Okay, probably more from then. And the whole component, the whole goal of this stay is to get the child able to go back home as soon as possible. And so what do? They give the child as much medication as possible to get the kid stable enough to go back home with mom and dad. So then they go back home with mom and dad, and then it starts the side effects of the medication. I mean, it is a revolving door. It is a revolving door that leads to nothing but tons and tons of bills, tons and tons of bills. Because if you think of it from point A to point B, you have to, and it's so funny too, you have to take the kid to the ER. They get evaluated, and 9 times out of 10, the place that they're going to be transporting the child to is far away or it's at another location. So right away, you have an ER bill. You then have an ambulance bill to transport the child to a place. Then you have the place bill, the place where they're at for like 3 days, the mental health facility. Then you have to pay for all the drugs that they're going to give them and the copays for those drugs. Then they get them home as soon as possible, and then you go through it all over again. And then now you're experiencing side effects to all these medications. And then you have to go through it at the child's school, because the child's school starts showing these behaviors at school. And so then you have to go through the IEP process. Then you have to go through the medication process. Then you have to go through suspensions and all of this because the child is acting up because of the side effects of the medication. medications. And it is this revolving door, and it really doesn't stop you. Like for me, I mean, bankruptcy, you know, from all the bills, like it's just this revolving door. And they say, well, what do you do? This is what you can do if your child is acting up or is, you know, experiencing this from the side effects to medication. You can call the police. The police will come. Then if you call the police, you're going to go to the ER. Then if you go to the ER, you're going to go back to the facility, and you have to consider how much this is costing the parent, okay, for this revolving door. And it doesn't stop. You go to visits after visits, more drugs after more drugs. You can go to counseling, but it seems like it doesn't stop. And I really feel that the system is not helping. It's not helping. I really wish that we could have the neuropathic component come in and really, really start to look at nutrition. And I really think that the counseling and the therapy, but these drugs, I have never seen it really benefit. I've seen it get progressively worse from these side effects, just progressively worse. And then another thing is that if you really study and research, if your kid is on 4 to 5 different psychiatric meds from sleep to, oh, now he's gaining weight on this one, so you need to make sure that now we have another drug for him to take to help curb his appetite so he doesn't eat as much, because, you know, we're trying to deal with one side effect here and we're going to try to, you know, curb it with this side effect. So you'll wind up with your kid being on all of these medications, and then you'll see it label after label. They just increase the meds, they increase the labels, and the kid never gets well. And ultimately what I see is these kids usually will tend to wind up in the correctional facilities, because if they can't get well, what tends to happen is the parents can't control them. They can't. And then what happens is they go to the correctional facilities, and then in the correctional facilities, that's where they'll get into a group home, or that's where they'll get whatever, but they have to wind up in corrections, which leads me to the whole correctional facility and public schools in general. Okay, you look at the price of to incarcerate someone in California for 1 year. Last time I checked, and this was like probably 1 or 2 years ago, it was like $72,000 a year to incarcerate one person in California. Okay, one person in California is a $72,000 price tag. Okay. And you consider that in figure, and you consider the state of the economy and just in the amount of burden that is placed on taxpayers, okay? And you look at the $72,000 figure and you think, how could we prevent this from happening? Like, what prevention measures could we take to try to do whatever we can to try to alleviate the burden of a $72,000 a year burden on taxpayers? And you look at the school system, you know, a lot of single parent homes, okay? A lot of kids without fathers or the opposite, you know? Single parent homes. And you would think these kids need mentors. I know that in my city, I tried to call for a mentor for my son, and there was a waiting list. They were not even accepting. There was such a need for male mentors for these kids that there was a waiting list, and they weren't even accepting to add people onto this waiting list, okay? So you see this mentorship, you know, issue. You see nutrition is an issue. I don't know if you've seen the documentary. It's called Fed Up. It's on Netflix, and it talks about, you know, how the government is allowing these corporate contracts to feed our children. And basically what we're getting is, you know, there was a president, I don't know if it was Reagan, that allowed it stopped with parents, volunteers creating and making school lunches for nutritional benefits, and they got bought out by corporate contracts. So you got Pizza Hut, you got, you know, Otis Spunkemeyer cookies, you got Coca-Cola. It interests me that they will put these labels on these kids and say that they are hyperactive and they have ADHD. Why aren't these kids, the very first period that they go to, they should have PE? I and never ever stop PE. Make the kids sprint back and forth right when when they get to school, because if they do it right when they get to school, then the kids are going to, you know, be mellowed out in the next period and probably throughout the rest of the day. Are they drinking Coca-Cola every day? Are they eating like sugary cereals for breakfast? Like, these are things that are common sense that, you know, should be really, really looked at. And the fact that they're buying out what we feed these children, and they're feeding them garbage, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but there's no health benefits to it. Isn't that like a red flag of where our interests are vested in America? You know, our interests are more vested in corporate profits than they are in the nutrition of our youth. You know, you would think that if we would invest in a Jamba Juice smoothie every day in public schools, at the beginning of schools with kale, it has to be green, it has to have some kind of nutritional benefit. Like, just to see the data of what would happen within that school after a couple months of doing it, you know, would it improve anything, you know, on a health level? But these corporate contracts, if you look at it, it shows that we're more vested in this country in corporate profit than we are in our own children and our own health in this country. And I just, it is alarming to me. I mean, even if you looked at these labels and you said, okay, these kids have ADHD, okay, first period PE, they have PE all year round, okay? If a kid is depressed or angry, if a kid has anger and aggression, you know, you might think, okay, well, in the morning, it takes them some time to wake up. They're kind of groggy in the morning. I think we should put this kid, the angry kid, in third period PE because that's midday. So whatever made him angry in the morning, hopefully he can get out by running sprints across the football field, okay? Like, just strategically thinking of common sense, practical ways that could improve this. You know, I really, it alarms me when I see, you know, them advertising ADHD in Vallejo, and you go to, you know, Danville or Moraga, you don't see them, Lafayette, you don't see them, you know, advertising over Whole Foods to their kids, you know, that we think that, you know, they have hyperactivity ADHD. You see it more so marketed in the lower class areas, which is the same thing Philip Morris and, you know, the cigarette companies that they do, you know, you'll see a lot of, well, I don't know that for sure. I haven't seen a cigarette ad recently, but I know that I saw an advertisement talking about that. So that's alarming as well. So, I mean, it's like preventative methods for making sure that these kids have proper nutrition for health, because we can't afford, it's not sustainable. We can't afford all of these medications. We can't afford people who aren't even paying into healthcare, you know, on five or six different pharma medications that are costing the system. How is that sustainable? How could we even sustain as it is with healthcare if you consider the fact that even if you have a job and you're working and you pay in $400 a month in medical and your employer is paying $1,000, how on earth are you, does that even cover the cost of one ER bill? One. Not to mention all the medication. It's not sustainable. It doesn't make sense. I don't see how the economy can sustain when the cost far exceeds what people are even paying, you know? And so then you look at, you know, the cafeterias and all of that and what these kids are eating and these labels that they're getting. And I just wanted to see, you know, what would happen if they actually, you know, invested in Jamba Juice. Get out the Pizza Hut. Get out all that. Let's put in Jamba Juice. Let's see what happens if these kids get what they need in a smoothie every day, you know? You don't see that. You don't see that. And you just don't see it. And I wonder, I think in the documentary it was Fed Up, they said that Congress had even said that pizza was a vegetable, which is really interesting because they had to have a certain amount of vegetables in the cafeteria menu. And they said that pizza was a vegetable. This is on Netflix if you want to watch it. It says Fed Up. And they said that pizza was a vegetable because it had tomato in it. Well, tomato is a fruit. So that's really like a really bad argument. But it just talks about the profit and how this nation went from, you know, being nutritionally based to being corporate profit based. And you know, we think about, you know, how nutrition could play a component in not only mental health, but, you know, just in general and preventing illness and preventing sickness. And then we go back to that, you know, corporate cost, $72,000 a year for California to incarcerate somebody. With mentorship programs, what I just can't believe that we have all these colleges, we have universities in California, how these universities who are, you know, educating our next psychologists can't, you know, work with these public schools and have free internships at these public schools to have mentorship programs. Like, why can't we have psychologists working for free so they can earn their degree and these kids could get some, you know, professional, or even, it doesn't even have to be completely professional, internship, mentorship programs for single household parents. Like, there's so many ways that you could try to prevent that $72,000 a year incarceration rate in California. There are so many ways that would probably prove to be less expensive than that $72,000 a year incarceration rate, and yet we don't see it. I don't see it. And then you see, you know, scared straight programs. I mean, the other thing that really stands out in my mind is you can't even rent a studio in California on minimum wage. You can't even rent a studio in California on minimum wage. And you have these people who get out of incarceration, who've been in prison for years, and the recidivism rate is so bad because you get out and what are you qualified to do? Even if they get educated, they have felonies, so they can't get jobs. No one wants to hire them. And so they can make what, you know, minimum wage standing out in front of Little Caesars with waving a sign around. I know they're going to have good intentions. They don't want to go back to prison. But how long is that going to last before they have to, or are almost forced in back into crime? Because they can't afford to survive. And if we don't have a program in place that makes it so that these people can afford to survive, at least to survive, like have a roof and basic needs, and then how do we expect to not have them return to prison? How do we expect to not have them return, and then ultimately the taxpayer is paying for that? We're paying for that. And you know, like scared straight, give these guys a job. They don't have to go to the schools. You can do those web-based, you know, video conferencing, and have these guys who are ex-gangbangers talk to these kids in these public schools about why they shouldn't be in gangs and what their experience was and what happened to them and why they decided to do what they do. Make these guys make money, right? By scaring these kids in public schools, like, this is not a good idea. Did you hear what that guy said? Oh my gosh, he got locked up forever. You know, he talked about it. Like, there are ways that you could, you know, benefit these guys who are coming out of prison who don't want to go back and make them money. And then also in the same aspect, give these kids that are in public schools, like, that is not a good idea. You don't want to go to prison. I mean, making sure that we fund extracurricular activities for these kids, that it's just every kid should be in an extracurricular activity. I mean, what would be the savings? I mean, you think about one person, $72,000, and you take that one person, $72,000, and you invest it in making sure all of these kids can play sports. They can play sports, they can play, you know, an instrument, they can play whatever, to keep them dream focused, hope focused, to keep them, you know, dreaming about their future. Because if they're poor and they can't, and they keep hearing, we can't afford that, we can't afford that, we can't afford that, they get depressed. They lose hope. They lose focus. And then they go and they get involved in criminal activities. They get involved in things that they shouldn't get involved in. So if you look at this, I don't see this prevention. I don't see this amount of prevention that is happening, and being invested in on such a level. And if you see it, and investing in nutrition and health and all of that. And if you see that and you're thinking, why on earth would they want to not try as much as possible to prevent that incarceration cost? Well, ultimately, I think it's because there are corporate contracts that are associated with that costs. And I feel like this is probably wrong and way off base, but I feel like, is it because some people profit more off of debilitating humans than they do if they don't? Like, is there profit in the debilitation of human beings? Because I don't understand why you wouldn't be full force trying to prevent that type of a tab. And ultimately, who's paying for that tab? The taxpayers are. And if you can look at our debt in this nation, it's not, it doesn't look like what's happening right now is very sustainable. It's not going to sustain. There's no way that people are even, one ER bill, $5,000. My father just told me he got a $5,000 ER bill. And, you know, and so then they'll try to hinder people from being able to get, you have to, this high share of costs. And it's taking the burden off of the government, right? But then you have this high share of cost. Ultimately, with the increased inflation and the increased cost of rent and the increased cost of gas and the increased cost of everything, do you think that these people with all these share of costs are going to be able to pay these bills? Do you really think so? Like, this person makes, you know, just above minimum wage, and they're going to be able to, he or she, or, you know, they make whatever, even if you make, you know, a medium type income, you know, and they've inflated everything. So now they say the unemployment rate is better. So, you know, now we're going to inflate, you know, interest rates, and they're inflating everything. Do you think the very last thing these people are going to pay are their ER bills? The very last thing these people are going to be pay, they're going to be trying to survive and keep the lights on and pay and feed their families. The very last thing that these people are going to pay are these healthcare costs. And ultimately, someone has to pay the healthcare. They have to have the lights on. They have to keep in business. So who ultimately, when people start filing bankruptcy because they can't pay their healthcare costs and all these bills, who pays for it? When people file bankruptcy, who pays for it? It's amazing to me. And why wouldn't they want to prevent it? Is it because there's profits? But who's profiting? Who's profiting for debilitating people? Is it the corporations? And who's paying for it? It's the taxpayers. So if you see there is a they're profiting, but we're paying for it, right? And then ultimately everything's getting inflated. So we're paying, they're raising our taxes, they're raising our cost of healthcare. They're raising our cost of car insurance because they've raised the cost of healthcare, so ambulance bills go up, everything goes up. And so they're profiting, and ultimately we're paying for it. And when people start filing bankruptcy and banks, whatever, we're paying for it. And it's just, and if you just see that, and I don't see how it's good, how it's sustainable. And I've been looking at other things on site, how that's sustainable. And I feel like, I think nutrition is a barrier on all levels. I was watching something about Haiti, and, you know, when kids are malnourished, they're starving or whatever, they've created this potent, it's like a peanut butter sauce. It's a peanut butter treatment. It's a medical treatment for children who have been malnourished, who are starving. And basically it has tons of vitamins in it. It is super, super, super potent. And they're feeding it to these kids to get them well again because they're so malnourished. And I feel like, you know, I think that the nutrition is one of the key components to depression. If you eat like garbage, you're going to feel like garbage. You're going to feel bad. And with just even just the cost of food, healthy food, do you see Whole Foods in lower, you know, class neighborhoods? Do you see these health food stores all around? They're not there because they can't afford them. People can't afford them. You can't afford to eat super healthy when, you know, you're on, you know, when you're low income. You can't. And I think ultimately, like, nutrition is key. And I feel like with the kids in schools that they're robbing that of our children, and they're feeding them, and they're letting corporations profit off of them. And then at the same time, they're getting paid price tags. They're getting paid for they're getting paid off of their sickness, off of their depression, off of their everything. And I just feel very strongly about the protections that need to happen for our children in this country. I really feel very strongly about that. It hits home to me because I feel like I've experienced it, and it's been a nightmare. And I feel like, I understand that corporations want to profit. I understand that people want revenue. I understand all of that. But when it is at the expense of innocent children who are vulnerable to the decisions that we make for them, who are, you know, who often have parents who are uneducated, who lack education, who are going to completely entrust and put their trust in the healthcare professionals to make the best decisions. And I don't care, there's good and bad car salesmen in every profession. And just because you have more degrees than a thermometer, it does not ensure you have integrity. It does not. It does not ensure that you have integrity. It does not ensure that you're not taking money from pharma incentives to buy yourself a yacht or to buy yourself your next vacation at the expense of trying, oh, well, I'm just going to, all I'm doing is just, you know, I'm using this drug more. And you're pushing drugs down people's mouths for profit. And there's a conflict of interest. I mean, I'm not going to get into all of this conflict of interest and how, there's a big conflict of interest around public health, but my main concern is children. And why aren't these laws in place? You're diagnosing off symptoms alone, and there should be tons of laws around that to ensure that children aren't being over-medicated, to ensure that children aren't being diagnosed with new labels from current side effects, to ensure that every other possible medical element is ruled out before they even hit that room for a psychiatrist, and to ensure that there's a dietitian and they've been watching what they've been eating for a month. I mean, there should be legal protections to protect kids. And you know what? I understand that greed is greed, but there's a time where people need to say, okay, this is enough. Like this is drawing the line. When it gets into innocent children, we're drawing a line, and something needs to change here, because I know that there's a lot of greed in this country. I feel that there's a lot of greed in this country, but I also know that I have faith in people, and most people, I don't care, most people do not want to let children be jeopardized. And I want to see these laws, and I want to see these protections. And I really wish that we could get into, you know, neuropathic treatments and allow these kids to see neuropathic doctors covered, you know, not just a high pharma consumption system, but to be able to have alternatives and to have a least harm approach to treating children, least harm, you know, like if there's an herb that's less than $20 that will help them sleep, give them melatonin instead of some trazodone. I want to make sure that the kid is getting the melatonin instead of the trazodone. Like, I think that there should be a less harm approach model. And I also think that it would save this country a lot of money if they would look at these files of these people who are, you know, on Medi-Cal, who aren't even paying any money into the system, right? Who are on Medi-Cal, who have 5 to 10 different drugs, who are taking insulin for, you know, diabetes, who are on antidepressants and all of these medications, and to have a couple professionals, a neuropathic doctor, a physician, and, you know, whatever, a psychiatrist, do a review of their file to see, you know what, I think that this person is being over-medicated. Let's look at the timeline of all these meds. Yeah, I think that this might have been a result of a side effect here, and try to wean them off of some of this medication that is costing the system so much money. It is ridiculous. That is ultimately costing the taxpayers so much money, and the system can't sustain. And the problem with the system, in my opinion, is it's pocketed. That some way, in some avenue, all of these people who are running for office are getting funded and getting, you know, money to run these races with, you know, help of corporate networks and friends and this and this and this. And so you get this a bunch of brilliant minded, smart people in a room, and they're all bound by whoever funded them, right? They're all bound by their funders. And there's, you know, I think that it's not a matter of this nation not knowing what needs to happen to fix this nation. I don't think they already know. They're smart. They're not unintelligent people. But I do believe that it is a level of profit. It is a level of a pocketed system, and you can't go this way or that way. You might upset the funders. And we live in a nation that is now so pocketed that it's hard to do anything. I mean, you see these, and it's this is not like it's not new to Americans who, I mean, you see all of these new documentaries that are coming up all across, you know, this nation that are really, really, truly exposing and drawing light to this. I mean, just look at the Netflix documentaries, you know, What the Health, Fed Up, Cowspiracy, or whatever it is. All of these different documentaries that are really pointing out the fact that a lot of these nonprofits that are in place to protect our health, like, you know, the Heart Association, like they name, this is not me speaking, this is the documentary speaking, where they're naming these nonprofit organizations that are responsible for making sure that we are protected and our health is protected. And a lot of them were saying for people to eat processed meat and whatever on their sites, meat, when the World Health Organization had said that it's a level one carcinogen to eat processed meat. And yet these people are, you know, still having them on their sites. And then you find out that they're being funded by the meat and dairy industry. So you see that the system is pocketed. It is pocketed. And it's like if processed meat is a level one carcinogenic food, it should have a warning label on the processed meat, just like a pack of cigarettes have a warning label that it can cause cancer. And the fact that the warning label isn't there, they talk about how the lobbyists, the corporate lobbyists, the paid lobbyists are, you know, that are blocking, you know, these new laws and change and everything. It's because the system's pocketed. And I don't care what anybody says, it's pocketed. And there's really no way to change things in a pocketed system, because people know what the solution is, they know what would help, they know what's going to fix it, but everything's pocketed. So how do you bring about change? The only real way to bring about change is by exposing truth to the actual Americans so that they just stop and they force the change. Because if people don't see the truth and the Americans don't force the change, it's not going to happen. You know, they're going to go as far as they can and continue with this until the Americans wake up on such a level and they start asking questions. And when they start asking questions and, you know, the 7 billion in the world start looking at the, you know, whatever percent it is and say, hey, this is not right, then you start seeing change happening. And I really feel, you know, with our youth that it's important. And I think that, you know, the lower and middle class populations, we need to protect our youth. We need to protect our youth, because when you see those marketing billboards that are advertising these labels and these sicknesses, and you don't see the prevention and you don't see the actual scientific evidence. I want to see the brain scan that you did on this little girl to ensure that she has ADHD. I also want to see the laws that you've put in place to protect her health from being misdiagnosed before you start feeding her these medications. Yes, I want to see that. I want to see the month that you made her mother or father write down what she's been eating for an entire month before you diagnosed her off symptoms alone. I want to see that. I want to see this nation and the laws that they're putting up and the fight they're putting up for the youth and of this country. I want to see these corporate contracts be bought out of our public schools, and I want to see healthy foods start being cooked in schools again. I want to see Jamba Juice being the number one corporate supplier that is feeding American children, and I want to see their smoothies being given out for free every day to make sure that these kids are getting fruits and vegetables. I want to see, and the most interesting thing to me is how they want to cut money in certain ways. Like, I saw something, and I don't know that this is true. It was in mainstream. I don't know, but it was something about the federal government is going to cut food stamps. To save money, they're going to cut food stamps. So they're going to give out like Spam in a can, some kind of canned meat, some powdered milk, whatever. And the first thing that came to my mind is, what is this going to help? Like, what is this going to solve? I'm curious to know. Like, and they were saying how it's going to save tons of money, and it's going to, you know, it's going to be, they're going to put some fresh produce in there in a box. And I was like, I know damn well, excuse my language, but these people are not going to eat Spam meat. They might if they're hungry. They might if they're hungry, okay? But I can almost guarantee you that when they revoke those food stamps, what you're going to see happen is shoplifting is going to increase. Shoplifting. Because these people who are desperately trying to feed their families, you know, spam in a can, you know, they're going to wind up going to your local warm Walmarts, your local Raley's, your local Albertsons, your local whatever, Safeways, and they're going to start shoplifting. Who ultimately pays for shoplifting? We had a grocery store where I live just recently go out of business, and I was talking to a manager of a grocery store while I was in a checkout stand, and we were talking about it. And I was like, what happened? She said, yes, the rent was too high, and they had way too many shoplifters. Okay, so the rent was too high, and they had way too many shoplifters, and so they had to close down and go out of business. Okay, so when they stop food stamps and the shoplifting increases, you know, inflation doesn't seem like, I just saw the gas price jump like 25 cents, like in a matter of a week. And, you know, and the inflation is going up. The cost of renting is so just, it's ridiculous in California. Who's going to pay for all this shoplifting that's going to ultimately happen? Who's going to pay for that? Do taxpayers pay for that? And then what's going to happen? Are grocery stores going to be able to sustain with the high cost of rent and the amount of shoplifters? I'm just wondering if we're going to have a monopolization of Amazon kind of come in and kind of buy out the entire grocery market. I'm just wondering what's going to happen. It's very interesting to me. That's supposed to solve any kind of problems, not to mention the health component. Because if the healthcare system is not sustainable and we don't need people, you know, on Medi-Cal getting free healthcare that are on like 5 or 6 different pharmaceutical medications that cost, you know, $600 to $900 plus a pop, you know, a month, and we can't sustain like that. Somehow, not giving these people health food and investing in prevention is really like, it's just a disaster in my mind. It is a disaster. Like, they're going to go to McDonald's. I can get, you know, 2 hamburgers for $1.50. I can get, you know, a cup of noodles for, you know, $2. So what we're going to see is it's going to get worse, right? It's going to get worse. And who, it can't sustain. Who's going to pay for all of this? Who's going to pay for all of this? It was interesting to me when I saw an ad and it said that the federal government decided to raise the interest rates because the unemployment rate was better. It was more increased or whatever. Like, there's less people on unemployment. And what I really wanted to see is how many people actually applied for unemployment and how many people actually were approved for unemployment. How many people were rejected for unemployment this year who applied? I want to see if that number has changed within the last, you know, couple of years. Because just because you apply for it doesn't mean that you're going to get approved for it, right? So I wanted to see, you know, when you're giving that number and you're saying that the unemployment rate is the reason why they feel it's okay and the economy is thriving and it is okay to raise the unemployment or the interest rate in this country, I want to see the data on how many people actually applied for unemployment and how many people were actually rejected or revoked for unemployment. Because do you see how that data right there could be manipulated to show you something? Also, too, I want to see the amount of people who are on disability, state disability right now for mental health issues. I'd like to see that number as well, because just because they're being paid as being disabled doesn't mean they're not unemployed. I would also like to see the number of people who've applied for Social Security who are not working. And I believe that it can take like 6 months before they can apply. And then I believe that after they're not working for 6 months and they apply, up to a year for a decision, and then after that, I believe it takes if they have to appeal, they might have to wait another year to appeal, and all the while they can hardly work. So I also want to see all of the people, Americans, that are in limbo status, and that's not a word, but in status of waiting for Social Security, who also aren't working. Okay, so you got people on state disability not working, you got people waiting for Social Security up to 2+ years not working, then you got the unemployment, and then I want to see the data of the people who applied for unemployment who were denied the unemployment or revoked unemployment. That would give us a much clearer picture of the economy and how well we're doing, okay? And whether or not the federal income, you know, increase is really truly justifiable, okay? because I, if you see how data could be manipulated, it's surreal. So back to that, I don't see why they wouldn't invest in protecting, you know, in preventing criminals and also ensuring that when people get out of prison that they can survive. I was so interested. I don't know why, but I went online and I did a state paycheck calculator online. And if you take the minimum wage in California, it's like $12 an hour, I think. And you do, you know, the whole paycheck calculator, it'll deduct out the taxes, state and federal, and it'll show you what the weekly wage is for someone on unemployment. I mean, not on unemployment, for somebody that's on, that's making a minimum wage. So one person who has no children making minimum wage in California after taxes, I forget the exact figure, but it was something ridiculous. Like they make full time, I think it was like $300 a week. Then if you, and that's after taxes, okay? Then if you go on Craigslist and you go on there and you search for studios and you do the search in three different counties within the Bay Area and you sort it by the cheapest possible rent for a studio in those three different counties, you'll get a number that is like just below, like it's either above or just barely below what they would make in an entire month. So just seeing that figure alone, the number of homelessness that's going to increase just on the fact that you cannot even afford to rent a studio in California if you work full time on minimum wage. And what's alarming about that is people need to survive. And I've heard a lot of people are moving out of this state, but I see an increased chance that, you know, crime is going to go up because people get desperate. And what's going to happen? You're going to see crime is going to go up when people can't survive. And if people get out of prison and, you know, they can't even get a job, no one's going to hire them and they can't even afford a studio working minimum wage, we're going to see an increase in crime. And that's really sorry for, you know, people who it's just our safety is going to be infringed upon because of this. So when I do talk on my site, those were just revelations that I've had based on my own experience, my life experiences, the things that I've gone through, the things that I've seen. I mean, I've seen the sides of the system on all different sides of the, you know, I've really experienced a lot of the system, and I've seen like the revolving door. I've seen, you know, even talk to police officers, you know, about some of these kids. And I had a police officer who told me, he's like, yeah, these kids on some of these meds, they act up, they get aggressive, they go wild, you know, like we see it every day. These and if you study I'm going off track, I'm gonna finish up, but if you study like I did when I was trying to find solutions to some of my when I was trying to find solutions and research things, if you study some of the lawsuits on, you know, you'll see a common thing with a lot of these ADHD medications, methylphenidate, Concerta. You'll see there is a track record of aggressive and hostility, and as a side effect, you will see that. You will also see a lot of these drugs that have been hurting people, and a fight with some of these attorneys to get these drugs off the market, and that they're losing because they profit so much on these drugs. It's really alarming. But what I really want to just do is, you know, I would like to see more laws in place to protect kids. And if that's not going to happen because the system is pocketed, what I would really, really, truly like to see is just an awareness and truth about it to be kind of spread about it, the truth and just awareness that, you know, there is greed and there is corruption that is, you know, in this country, and we need to protect our children and we need to be advocates for our own health. Because if the system isn't going to do it and make sure that these kids are safeguarded and protective, I mean, I can go to any one of them and say, okay, you're saying, if you're telling me that they are, then you tell me the amount of laws that a psychiatrist needs to follow to ensure that these kids aren't being diagnosed off symptoms alone, you know, and that their healths are being protected. I want to see the list of laws in place. I want to see how you're protecting them. You show me. I want to see it. I want to see the laws that make you rule out all the other medical possibilities and sicknesses. I want to see the laws that make sure that you tell me that these kids have their diets and they're seeing dietitians and nutritionists to make sure that they're even eating right. You show me that that is a protocol and a procedure that is legally bound that these psychiatrists need to stand by. You show me that. You also show me where I can look and I can see and make sure that they didn't receive any pharmaceutical incentives to push the drugs down my kid's face. I want to see that. Write it. Show me what law and where it is and where I can look it up, because I want to see that. I also want to make sure that there, why isn't there a task force by the government to ensure the safety of these children by making sure that they're investigating any kind of weird things like, wow, you know, these pharmaceutical companies are giving away free, you know, trips, vacations to the Bahamas. They're giving away free trips to Rome. Like, we need to be looking at those things, because it is a conflict of interest to the health and safety of children. It is one thing when an adult human being goes to a doctor and says, I'm depressed, and the doctor says to the man or woman, here's an antidepressant. You know what? It may make you commit suicide. That's one of the side effects. It may make you psychotic. It may make you gain weight, and it could give you a heart attack. Do you feel that the perks of this drug outweigh the risks? And they say yes. Give them the medicine. But when you're doing that to a child who is completely vulnerable to the decisions that you make for them, and once their health is infringed, they can't get their health back, and they're trusting, and most times their parents may be uneducated and are trusting the professionals, okay? Just because you have more degrees than a thermometer doesn't guarantee you have integrity. I don't care. That's the way it is. They're entrusting them. So that means that it is the responsibility of this nation to provide the laws, the regulations, and make sure that anyone that goes against that is penalized. It's a felony. If you're going to be accepting money and then feeding drugs down a child's face for profit, that is a felony. You can go to prison. Like, it needs to be that serious. That serious. And so when I talk about these things, I talk about it because I seriously feel that that it is worth it. It is worth whatever retaliation, whatever slander, whatever persecution that is going to come up against you. Someone needs to speak up about this. Someone needs to speak up for children. Children don't have a voice. They don't have a voice. They are vulnerable to the adults around them, and someone needs to say something. And I don't care if it has to be me. I'm saying something. And that's why I say what I say. That's why I started my website. It started off with the paper pusher. Then it started off with Zion. I started this, and I found a lot of truth through Jesus Christ. I feel like there's a lot of truth through Him, and I'm a Jesus. I just love Jesus, and I think that somebody needs to speak up for these kids. And I'm going to keep on evangelizing Jesus. I'm going to keep on evangelizing nutrition, because it is so linked to mental health. It is so linked to preventing sickness. And if you just look at the sustainability of the current system and not be able to do like common sense math on how is this country going to sustain like this, it's just common sense, you know? It's just calm. Google, you know, Prozac or some of these new drugs that come out, the full market cost of these drugs, and then multiply that by how many else drugs you know someone on Medi-Cal is taking for a 30-day supply, and then one ER visit, and add that up and see, and times that by how many people are on Medi-Cal, okay? Get an average. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not sustainable. And I stand by what I say. I stand by what I said before about my views of what's going to happen and what could happen to the system right now. And I stand by it. And you know what? I could be wrong, and I don't need to be right. And if I'm wrong, that's okay. But I'm just saying how I feel, And I'm sharing that. And if you don't like my opinions, you are more than welcome to reject them. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to approve of me. You don't have to like me. You don't have to even read the stuff on my website. You are free to not. But I do share what I feel. I do share my opinions. I am confident in myself to where I can, you know, accept people disagreeing with me. Like, you have the right to your own opinion, just as I have the right to mine. And I just wanted to just say, you know, if anything, my hopes for, you know, what I've written about before and the things that I've done on Twitter or whatever previously is just, I wish somebody, when I was a young mom, I was uneducated, I wish someone would have stopped me and said, have you looked at any alternatives? Like, I just wish somebody would have, you know, let me know about some of, you know, the platforms of greed and the dangers that are present in the current system and the lack of protection. And I had a lack of knowledge, and I just really wish somebody would have pulled me aside and told me and warned me and, you know, said something to me. So if I could just, you know, bring it up to other parents that might be going through something similar, you know, I'm still looking for alternatives. I'm still looking for things that work, but I know that that those drugs, those heavy side effects of those drugs can be devastating. Just absolutely devastating. And I think that, you know, I just really wish that the system would change. I really wish that they would go up to bat and really protect children and their health. And I really wish that that would happen. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I do know that if you raise awareness and just at least alert parents who may have their kids on all of these different meds, you know, to some of the things like over-medication and pharmaceutical incentives and, you know, a lack of some of the negative research being published and some of the ways that they can manipulate data, some of the ways that, you know, the pharma companies do their own research. And, you know, if you're going to be trying to market a product, of course, you're going to leave out, you know, the most negative parts so that you can make profit. There's just so many things that I feel I wish someone would have told me. And I feel like sharing that and with other parents that might be going through it, just so at least they're alerted, you know, maybe they can ask more questions, you know, my kid's acting up because of the side effect. Is there, you know, is it, you know, just to ask more questions, even just to be aware of the situation, I think is important. And so I just wanted to say that, get some of those thoughts off my mind, and have a good day. Bye.